Don't panic. Don't panic. Don't panic.
Despite the seeming solidity and immobility of Kosciuszko, the ship had never been really immobile. All ships moved all the time, and she was no more likely to lose her grip and fall off when it was under drive than when it was moved only by the old law of physics. Kos wasn't a warship. It couldn't develop the acceleration of the most anemic civilian cargo vessel on in-system drive.
Lieutenant, I don't suppose you know whether the FTL drive is irretrievably broken.
The FTL drive.
At once, she knew what the Blood Horde was going to do, and kicked herself mentally for not seeing it before. Of course they were going to take their prize away from the possible rescue before trying to open it, like a jay with a sweet nut.
No, sir. Drives and maneuvers seemed to think it was most likely sabotage, but the sequence jumped out could have knocked something loose.
Those escorts ought to be doing something useful, like blowing us away when they see us moving under power.
Esme had forgotten about the escorts, too. Her mouth went dry. Here she was, clinging to the outside of a spaceship under power, which was likely to come under fire. Her EVA suit felt about as protective as facial tissue.
Unless our crew's doing it and they're talking to them, I suppose they could be moving away from the jump point and closer to the escorts.
No. Looks to me like we're heading for it, but on a different vector. Without the nav computer, I can't be sure, but didn't this jump point have four outbound vectors?
Yes. I can't judge the approach, but you're probably right, Lynn. We're less than a half hour from jump, I'd guess, and a lot more than a half hour from any place we can get into the ship. This should be interesting. Pity we have no way to record the experience of the first people to die going through unprotected jump.
The commando survived?
Silence followed. Esme assumed the others were watching the wheeling star field that proved Kos was moving under power.
They were in Wraith.
But there was a hull breach and forward shield failure. There's nothing wrong with Kos's FTL shields.
Sweeza didn't know anything about shield technology, except that all FTL-capable ships had FTL shields.
If we get off this thing and down onto the hull...
Good idea, Sweeza.
It took almost the entire half hour to clamber down, carefully clipping and unclipping and reclipping safety lines from the high, smooth arch of the materials transport track to the hull. Here, for the first time, Esme could feel through her boot soles a faint lateral tug, another proof that Kos was moving on her own, arguing with the inertia of her former path. They were perhaps two-thirds of the way across the bridge dome from the Special Materials Fabrication Unit, its bulge hiding from them T1 and all but the tip of Specmat. Suddenly, light behind them, a flare that spread into a glow overhead. Esme ducked instinctively and looked up. The materials transport track flared into blinding vapor at its highest point and shed flaming pieces that streamed along a track, revealing their progress.
Let's see. Now we're on the outside of a ship headed for jump and someone's shooting at us. I wonder where the Adventure Cube camera crew is.
On the other escort, of course. That's why they're not shooting at us yet.
I would wonder what else could go wrong, but I don't want to give the universe ideas.
Light flared again, and this time the haze thickened. The rest of the transport track peeled away.
Good tracking, but they'll burn up the power supply if they don't let it go.
Abrupt darkness. Esme blinked, and the stars showed again.
Doing all right, Lieutenant?
Fine, sir. Just trying to remember if there's an airlock access around here somewhere.
Because even if they could survive jump on the outside of the ship, they'd run out of air before they finished. Even a short jump lasted days longer than the air supply in an EVA suit.
That's an idea. Get back in and go for them?
No, sir. Not just the four of us, with only four light weapons. I was thinking just stay in the airlock with the outer hatch cracked so no one can get in it from the inside until we drop out of the jump, then go on.
Might work. We can use suit.
Kosciuszko bulled its way into the jump transition with an uncanny slithering lurch and a vibration that ground its way through Esme's boots into her sinuses. The stars were gone. She could see nothing beyond the readouts in her helmet, and they looked very strange indeed. Her comm was silent, as dark a silence as the visible dark around her. The vibration was unhealthy for the ship, for the connection of wing to core, for the stability of the drives themselves. If the drives failed, if they dropped out of FTL at some unmapped point. She clung to her handholds. She had never been that good in theory, and she knew little about FTL flight. except that there was no way to define where and when ships were when they vanished from one jump point and reappeared later, if there had been such a thing as absolute time, which there wasn't. The onboard reckoning might be anywhere from hours to days to, for the longest flight ever recorded, a quarter standard year. Onboard, inside the hull and the FTL shielding, the clocks worked. But the suit timekeeper wasn't keeping time, which meant it wasn't logging the oxygen she breathed, which meant she could run out without even knowing it.
Is it better to know when your oxygen runs out?
Esme shied away from that to a consideration of the suitcom failure. Lights and comm worked fine inside ships in FTL flight. Why not here, if they were inside the shields?
If we aren't inside the shields...
Esme's mind put the sounds together like pieces of a puzzle. It could have been a word slowed down. She nudged the suit controls, damping the sound. At least that worked. But if the suit comms didn't work, they could all get lost. Something bumped the back of her helmet. She turned cautiously. It had to be one of the others. It bumped again.
Radios don't work. Have to touch heads. Who can?
Seska tapped her arm, and she remembered her safety line. Esme switched on her helmet light and watched in amazement as the light reached slowly, slowly, down like the extrusion of a semi-solid adhesive from its tube. When it reached the hull, the edges of the shape it made rippled uneasily, the edges a moiré pattern of odd colors. Unfortunately, it illuminated no helpful markers, nothing to suggest which way an airlock might be.
Suiza!
If the light moved slowly, so might calm, the radio waves distorted by whatever the FTL drive did to space and time. Esme had a sense of waking up from some kindred slowness, as if part of her body were keyed to the velocity of light itself and lagged far behind them.
Here!
She dipped her head. The bar of light from her helmet bent slowly, undulating with the movement. She handed the end of her line to the gloved hand that appeared in the light.
I know someone who would take one look at that and spend the next month in a math trance trying to explain it.
Freeze linked. Bow relinked.
Airlock. Clock's not working.
Of course they had figured out the implications of that for themselves. Where was the nearest airlock? She stared into the darkness, trying to picture this part of the ship, to build up the model from her first days aboard when she studied COS. There was an airlock for the emergency evacuation of bridge crew at the base of the dome across from T1, which meant on their present path and perhaps a quarter hour's careful traverse. In the dark, she was not sure what their former path had been, but the leakage of the gravity unit helped her find downslope.
Follow me!
Suiza pointed her helmet downslope. The light beam bent, kinked like water from a moving hose, and rippled off in the approximate direction. Esme started after it, uneasily aware that she could catch up with her own light source. Just like the idiot captains they taught about in the academy, who had micro-jumped their ships out in front of their own beam weapons and fried themselves. She glanced sideways without moving her head, and saw other streams of light like her own, but slightly different in color. Felt a touch on her back.
We'll follow you. Stay in direct contact.
She felt her way cautiously from one grabbable protuberance to another. It was like climbing boulders in the dark, which she'd done only that one time because it was such a stupid way to get hurt, hanging out over a dark place, feeling for nubs and not knowing how far down. Here, down was a meaningless concept, and she had no idea what would happen if she lost contact with the hull. There was no sensation of external pressure, as there would be from speed in an atmosphere with wind battering. No, but from deep inside came another pressure, as one body cavity after another insisted that things were wrong, were bad, and shouldn't be moving this way. The worst of the vibration had evened out. It should have been better. Instead, she felt growing pressure in her skull. She could feel the roots of her teeth tickling her sinuses. Her eyes wanted to pop out to escape the swelling. She paused as she felt a tug on the line connecting her to the others.
I think maybe we're not inside the FTL shielding. Just the collision shields.
Esme's memory unreeled the correct reference this time, showing the FTL shield generators affecting a network of spacers set just under the hull covering. Of course, the outer hull could not be shielded from FTL influences. It had to travel there. It was hard not to overrun her light, but she finally figured out just how to position her head and move so that she could see possible handholds and clip joints coming up just out of reach. She passed a communications array and remembered that it was only a few meters from the airlock entrance. But which way? And exactly how many? She paused there, wrapped her line around the base of the array, not stopping to wonder why it hadn't snapped off when they went through the jump point.
It's nearby. Wait, I'm going to look.
Shine in different directions. Might help.
It would. She watched as the two beams she could see looped out on either side of hers. She gave herself 5 or 6 meters of line and scooted out to the end of it, then began circling. The airlock, when she found it, had a viewport beside the control panel. She clipped into the bar meant for that purpose, peeked through, and saw only more dark. She didn't want to try turning on the interior lights. Why announce to the Blood Horde commandos where they were? Esme tugged a signal on her line and wrestled with the control panel as she waited for the others to catch up. She had trouble making her light stay on the controls while she tried to operate them. The safety panel slid at last, and she looked at the directions. It had been designed for emergency exit, not entrance. So the entrance instructions were full of cautions and sequences intended to keep some idiot from blowing the pressure in neighboring compartments. She punched the sequence that should work. Nothing happened. She looked at the instructions again. First, lock the inner hatch, the button marked inner hatch, then the close switch. Then check the pressurization, test pressure. She went that far, then read and completed the rest of the sequence. But the lights did not turn green, and the airlock did not open.
Does it have a manual override?
Didn't find one. I tried the auto sequence twice.
Esme moved aside. Freeze found the override beneath a separate cover panel with its own instructions. It was mechanical, requiring a hard shove clockwise, which freed a set of dials that had to be rotated into the number sequence printed on the inside of the cover. Seska and Freeze struggled with the lever. She could imagine what they were saying. Fighting with the lever would use oxygen fast. Esme stared at the instructions for the automatic sequence, wondering why it wasn't working. Lock inner hatch, test pressurization, enter number of personnel coming in, key in opening sequence for outer lock. She'd done that. She went on reading, past the warnings against unauthorized use, down to the fine print, hoping to find something she'd missed that would get it open. In that fine print, down at the bottom, the final word was, "Note. External airlocks cannot be used during FTL flight." In even finer print, "The constraint poses no risk to personnel, as personnel are not engaged in EVA activities during FTL flight." Esme leaned over and put her helmet against Seska's.
Some fool must have painted this thing shut.
No, it won't work in FTL flight. It says that at the bottom.
The others stopped struggling. Freeze leaned into her helmet.
So it does, on this panel too. Says we don't need it because, of course, we aren't out here in FTL. Silly us, being impossible.
Wish they were right. All right, Sweeza, now what?
Esme opened her mouth to protest that. They outranked her. They were supposed to make the decisions. And shut it again, thinking. The oxygen running out at a rate they could not determine. Time passing. Somewhere, at least, inside the ship, time was passing. Could they make it to their original goal before the oxygen ran out? Could they get in if they did? If all the airlocks were inoperable in FTL flight, they could at least use the air outlets in the repair bays, if those worked. Then it occurred to her that maybe this airlock had an external oxygen feed, too. Some airlocks did, for the use of personnel stacked up waiting to use the lock. She turned back to the control panel and looked. There. Traditional green nipple fitting, though only one at this lock. Unless it too automatically shut off because no one would use it during FTL flight. Esme tapped Bowery, next to her, on the shoulder. He looked, nodded, and turned. She found the recharge hose on the back of his suit and unclipped it for him.